Hi, I'm Prepeer.
Hey, I'm Kelly Strawbridge. And this room sounds great.
We almost had a fight out there when somebody in this room trashed the White Album.
I mean, it's you gotta stick to your gun.
Even that, I'm like, where's the tambourine? Yeah. You know, like even there, I'm like, I didn't realize the tambourine helped the chords. You know, so. Yeah.
Hello, podcast lovers. Thank you for hitting play on This Room Sounds Great. I am Reese Williams, recording from In Your Ear Studios. And today we know that you have options when you are rubbing your rosary or saying your Hail Marys. But you chose us. And guess what? We're blessed. And all this spiritual talk is because of our guest today. We've got Prabir Trio. We have two of the four of Prabir Trio.
That's right.
Yeah, wow. Everyone listening is like two of the four of the trio. That's right.
That's right.
A sixth of the energy.
And I actually have a co-host, Doug Nunnally, of the Auricular and Newland Music Prize.
Hey, thanks. Yep.
And you may hear some reverberation of gongs in the background.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wow, we're in Studio C, where we have fur pelts and animal bone instruments and animal hide instruments and gongs. Ooh. But this room still sounds great. Now, before we got started, I mean, we were recording. We should insert some of that in there. You guys did a deep dive on some Beatles.
Yeah.
innocent.
Opinions.
You can just talk about them forever.
Anthology. personalities.
Easy topic.
Yeah. Were they a big influence, Prabir?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you do a good Ringo Starr impression.
On drums or?
yes, very much so. Very good.
Yeah,
drummer.
No, I remember watching the Beatles anthologies when they were released initially, and I saw the opening montage of episode one where they introduce the viewer, in this case me, at a young age, impressionable young age, to a gray Liverpool port. And then the camera pans into the water, which is murky and flowing. And then the opening lick to In My Life starts. And then it's just a montage of everything that band did in its relatively short career. And I didn't know that much about it, but I could tell that they had done a lot, because in order to have a montage that's 3 minutes long that isn't fast clips, you know, but ample clips, I was like, okay, this...
Was that your introduction?
I mean, you know, I'd known of the Beatles, you know, even growing up in India, everybody knew about the Beatles because they went to India and there was a lot of BBC, you know, footage of them. And, you know, my family worked in, still works in media and press, so... You know, that kind of information permeated through generations, you know, just because the Beatles were so huge internationally. And so I think I'd always kind of known of like Love Me Do and I Want to Hold Your Hand. And, you know, when you come to the U.S. and start going to like, you know, fifth grade school picnics and the band is like a bunch of teachers, what are they playing? They're playing like Please Please Me and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's like, the you know, that kind of Beatles was always there. And then the anthology kind of opened me up to the you know, what I call like the Royal Beatles, you know, like the Strawberry Fields Beatles and all that stuff. So it was nice to, yeah, but no, huge influence, really fun use of chords and melodies and rhythms and subject matter and harmonies and, you know, doing things for the sake of art, doing things for the sake of like song architecture, doing things for the sake of making a point or not making a point for the sake of making a point, you know, so.
Being a band that evolves.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. But I think what I really enjoyed is like it always felt and came across really sincere and really thoughtful.
That's a good point. Kelly, I didn't formally introduce the second member of the trio, of the four-person trio, Kelly Strawbridge.
Tangent in the house.
Hi.
Were you as influenced as well by them?
Slowly, I became very influenced by them, but it took a long time. I was introduced to them when I was I think I had seen the Ed Sullivan stuff, and I maybe knew I don't think I knew anything else other than that. And then during the summer of seventh grade, my mom put me in this, it was like a 60s, 70s class thing. It was like a summer program kind of thing. And the teacher put on Sergeant Pepper, did the title track. And I was like, my little seventh grade, I was like, this sounds funky. I was like, this is a funky song. And I didn't think that they did that. You know, I just thought they were just a rock band. So that was like the real introduction where I was like, oh, Sergeant Pepper, that's sounds completely different from everything else. And that was the start. But I think that you can't go through, if you're a musician, I feel like that at some point you're going to hit a Beatles thing. Even if it's for a hot second, there is something for everybody in that. Even if you don't play guitar or whatever, if you play a horn, they have a lot of horn stuff in their songs. They have great melodies, orchestration, all that kind of stuff too. So so that was definitely an eye opener. And you know, as Doug was talking crazy about the White Album just a little bit ago, the White Album was a big eye opener for me. That was really the one where I was like, oh, they sound like every band right here. Like they sound like they're getting out a different kind of energy that's completely different from the other records. It's not as gentle and, you know, we're whimsical. It's a rock record and it's very aggressive, and I really enjoy that record a lot. So yeah, White Album is.
We almost had a fight out there when somebody in this room trashed the White Album.
I mean, you gotta stick to your guns. It's not just one album; it's like four albums contained in one. So like, how do you rate it against the other? Two, like, just calling it great or not kind of misses the point because it was so ahead of the curve on a lot of styles that like who could call it great at that point? Like avant-garde was still barely a thing.
I think that you can call it great at that time because of the reaction that it got, which was
groundbreaking. No matter what you say, it was groundbreaking. Yeah.
But it was a hodgepodge of a bunch of those of all their solo songs, if you will, and putting it together. But at that time, people didn't know they were the solo songs.
Yeah.
So they just thought the Beatles were losing their mind, you know. But later, you're looking at it and you're like, oh wow, they just were like brimming over with creativity, and they got out of the way of themselves trying to do a certain kind of sound, the psychedelic sound, all of that, getting away from that, and they're just like, let's just make some music.
Yeah, because what was before that? Magical Mystery Tour?
Yeah.
Magical Mystery Tour. I mean, but that's not even technically a full album. Like a hodgepodge. Yeah.
Plus, yeah.
I mean, it's like, what, six songs are, four to six songs are originals.
I believe we call that an EP.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
So how does this influence how you guys put your albums together or not? Or
Well, okay, so you know, this past year we've been recording a bunch. Almost this time last year actually is where we started tracking demos for what will be the next album. And our good friend Brian Walthall's. What's up, bro?
Oh yeah, yeah. The best.
So we go in there and we just knocked out I think like 10 songs in one day. Like just demos, just for demos. Just like play through them and whatever, you know. There's a Beatles-y-ness there for me because it was just like a session, and you know, it's like you see so much, you know, like I'm not saying that I'm trying to emulate every step of the Beatles or whatever, but they kind of created this architecture of how it's done, you know, and so it's interesting to go through it. So we did the demos and it was really nice to be able to hear the songs, you know, not in their perfect form, but like at the current snapshot. And then we played them live so many times, and through that we started tweaking them. And then even when we got into we went to two studios to record this, one in DC called Ivacoda with Ben Green, and another one was Mountainside Studios in Charlottesville with James McLaughlin. And even in both of those, we still made ample last minute changes just because you're in a room that like inspires certain things, you know, so whether it's throwing down a bunch of hand claps that we would never have done live because we're playing our instruments, you know, that kind of stuff, doing a lot of vocals around one microphone, like getting it right, you know, and really blending with one another. You know, I don't know if those are all things that I would pinpoint as direct Beatles influences, but I mean, I think that's probably how I first started thinking about studios and things is through footage and videos from the Beatles. So yeah, you know, it emulates that. And then also just having, you know, in some of these songs, there are like tanpura drones or harmoniums, you know, our friend Prithvi, will be, you know, he has a mridanga, like adding those elements that have also been kind of like infused into rock music for the first time that I can, in my life at least, was through the Beatles, you know? So a lot of those things carry over into the studio, I think.
I don't think I've ever asked a musician this. How do you personally choose a studio? I don't think I've ever asked. I know we're all different.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of good studios in town, too.
We do. I mean, you know, space, engineer, feel, pace.
All of that. All of that matters. But, like, for example, with, you know, I mean, I can't speak for Kelly, Jeremy, and Kanika, but for me, you know, doing the demos with Brian was easy because he has his place built for that. You know, so it's like you show up. Well, I think we tracked it all live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, you show up and you just do it. And then a day later, you have a zip file awaiting you, you know, and there's your whole album, the demo of your entire album, you know. So Brian was chosen for that reason you know, for the efficiency of it. It's a quick setup, knock it out, you're out kind of thing. Two studios that we recorded at. Kelly and I actually have met at Bamboo many times to talk about recording and how are we going to do this next album and what's the deal and blah, 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 you know. So Hanji we did at Virginia Moonwalker with our buddy Russell Lacey, who's awesome and still has Moonwalker and is still awesome and is still doing many great things. And we were fortunate enough to spend a lot of time there. And he was in the band at the time. And it was just a kind of great... like, you know, it developed the band, you know, that album and those sessions and everything really fused brains together and rhythms together.
We also recorded that album three times.
Yeah.
Two times previously before that. Yeah. So we were very comfortable at the Moonwalker. So that, I think, a comfortability factor can roll into that. Yeah. It also, sometimes it is, there's accessibility, the rapport that you might have with people, that's a big part of it. And what exactly you're trying to accomplish. I think that's like also a big part of the studio thing, you know, because studios can feel like a doctor's office sometimes, depending on where you go. This place in your ear, not so. It's very, very nice here. A lot of nice low rugs. It's a dog that greets you when you walk in. It's beautiful. But you know, there's some places that have a very sterile approach to recording. And I think that, even going back even to the Beatles thing, I think they were always trying to get away from that because the BBC, the way that they recorded stuff back then was very scientific. They were like engineers were literal scientists.
Yeah.
Back then they all wore, you know, the white coats and they wore gloves and they wore suits and, you know, were very like, you can't do this, you can't do that, we can only do it like this. So the Beatles really broke through. You can't really be the Beatles. They had a lot of money, so they could stay in the studio every single day and really, really mess with the songs, you know. When it comes to choosing a studio now, it really is like the comfortability factor and what you're really trying to accomplish, because, you know, studios are not cheap depending on where you go. And, you know, I think that plays a big part in what you're going to try to do.
With what Kelly was saying, though, with what you're trying to accomplish, you know, there were two other kind of factors for these sets of recordings, for me at least, is that I wanted to continue that narrative of the two worlds kind of thing with the music, because some of the tunes, you know, tonally might need to be captured a little differently because they're kind of in this direction.
And expand then, on those worlds in case people don't get Hanji yet.
Well, so yeah, so it would be, you know, for musically, it would be the two worlds of India and the United States, or, you know, I will call it like Eastern music and Western music, you know, those two things. So we did two different studios for this next record. And part of it is to kind of further that two world, very noticeable two worldness of it, but two really great studios, you know. And the other thing is we've been playing a lot in Charlottesville and Washington, D.C. And, you know, recording there also is kind of like you're putting a little bit of stake into that economy, into that community, into that world of individuals, you know. So to kind of be there and be like, hey, Charlottesville, we love playing here once a month or whatever, but we're also going to like get away from Richmond where we don't have cell service, you know, sit in a lodge with our, you know, friend James McLaughlin, and we're going to really nail these parts and we're going to really like focus and we're going to get everything we can out of this. And then the same thing is true with Ivacoda in Washington, D.C., and working with Ben Green was great. You know, his room also sounds great. and, you know, we were able to knock out very efficiently the entire album with just a few days at both places, largely because we kicked it off so well with tracking the demos and kind of having, like, you know, what parts don't we like? You know, because we probably won't like them live either. So let's go ahead and start tweaking these parts. And then playing so much, you know, this last, in the summer of 2023 to now, the trio played probably more gigs than in the last 5 years of being a band, you know. We were everywhere, and it was so much fun, and we had a blast hanging out with, you know, the crew, but, you know.
Yeah, tell us about the other two peeps who couldn't make it today.
Yeah, Kanika Cook and Jeremy Flax, also in the trio. with Kelly and I.
Yeah, Jeremy's been in the band since the Christmas of 22.
Yeah, I think
Christmas of 22, and yeah, he's been with us for that minute of time, and he's a guitar player as well as a bass player. He has his own band called Jeremy Flax and the Heart Attacks. It's like very like punky kind of vibe. But he also is just like a great bass player and just super creative, very studied on the way that he wants to play music and the way that he wants to play our songs and stuff. So that's really awesome. Kanika is a singer songwriter on her own. She does like her own looping stuff and she performs a lot on her own as well, but she plays percussion and sings backups with us, and she just has like a distinctive thing about her, you know, that is just it's very pure, and it's like she has an incredible beat. You know, when she plays tambourine, she's like, it's honestly, sometimes it's, you really notice that she's not there, you know, and like I'll forget, you know, we'll be playing the three of us. And, you know, I'll be like, why is this? And it's because I don't hear that swinging tambourine like next. And the way that she melds together the songs, even with that tambourine and her
and
vocals.
Yeah.
It just really, you know, it really makes the trio.
Well, definitely,
what it is.
Well, we've definitely had sessions where I've hit up Jeremy and Kelly and left Kanika out for the sake of being like, hey, we're going to work on chords, you know, like meet me at the practice space and let's really like hammer out the chords in this song so we can get it. You know, and like even that, I'm like, where's the tambourine? Yeah. You know, like even there, I'm like, I didn't realize the tambourine helped the chords, you know? So, super, super cool group of people. But yeah, last year, those four people were everywhere, and that helped us, I think, get into those two studios and very efficiently just be like, we know this, let's record it, you know, knock it out.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I got a million questions. On the Kanika piece, you know, I saw her open for Miss Jaylen Brown last year at Bandidos for her farewell show, and it's just so intricate the way that she performs, so effortlessly intricate. Does she bring a lot of nuance in that, like, those recording spaces when she's allowed to kind of input it? Because obviously, like you said, like, when you're just working out the guts of a song, yeah, she's going to bring something, but it's not fully realized then. So when you guys are ready to make that fully realized product, do you really see, like, her value, like, come through, shine through?
I do. Yeah, I mean, as a joke, I'll say no. She
it's
didn't
so
even
subtle.
Make it to this interview.
Yeah, she's so
where's
subtle.
Her influence now? No, yeah, no, absolutely. You know, 100%. So I think my number one thing that I always super appreciate that Kanika brings to this is that we have a lot of vocals. You know, we have a lot of vocals that happen, and she's really good at hearing the parts, you know. So like, it's there's so many one take takes by Kanika, you know, and they're like new parts that we've invented in the studio. Hey, I feel like this part's missing something. Maybe there's a ascending vocal line, and Kanika's like, all right. And then like they hit record. Yeah. And then it's done. And then I'm like, all right, Kelly, go do the harmony. And he's like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Kelly needs 10 takes.
Yeah, no.
No, no, Kelly's awesome as well.
That's
no,
a fact.
Kelly's awesome as well.
There was a couple songs. I mean, there was a couple songs that we didn't perform as much live. So we did have to spend a little more time on a couple things. But yeah, no, I think her efficiency with how quick she is really where it's at with her. I think there's just something to be said for when you're playing music, you really try not to think. You try to just like play the part, like you're playing the part, try not to think about it, because then it could throw you off. It's very strange. I'm playing drums and I'm singing at the same time, but I'm not trying to think about what it is that I'm doing. But I'll sometimes just go, wait a minute, Kanika, what is the note I'm seeing? Like, what am I doing? And she would just be like, you know, she'll just throw it all out there. And you'd be surprised how little we have to talk, actually, because she's not that much of a talker anyways, but she just has a great music mind. You know, she can just get to the notes or get to whatever it is that we want, you know, right away. And I think that's the best thing about that.
There's a new song that we have, or our newest song rather, is on the album, is this song called I Will Be There. And it's effectively one chord for like 2 minutes before the next chord is introduced. And it's in this like open drone-y, you know, kind of sitar-y kind of tuning. And I played it for her a long time ago. Because we were doing a gig somewhere with my buddy Prithvi, and we were doing this song, and in my mind I was like, I don't know where the harmony, like I don't know what the harmony is going to be, you know, I don't know what the backing vocal parts are going to be or whatever. And then I played it through once, and then we practiced it, and then we practiced it another time, and then I think like by the third time or whatever, it was completed. Like she had helped me think through like where and what and who and blah blah blah, you know, like what's why, like this, yeah, let's do ascending like here versus singing words here, you know, those types of that type of nuance that I might not like care about in the initial molten hot song process, where I'm always going to be like a rhythm person. Mm-hmm. You know, so I hit everything from that capacity. So it's nice that Kanika can add these awesome harmonies. It's great that Kelly adds like a lot of structure, like, cause I'll do one thing forever. I don't care. You know, I love getting in that zone where I'm like, this is one chord and one riff for 9 minutes and the world's going to have to deal with it. You know? And then Kelly's always like, let's try another chord and like around second 20. And I'm like, what? You know? And then Jeremy actually is like, for being the bass player, Jeremy actually adds a lot of melody to everything in his parts, you know, because when we started playing together, he was like, what kind of bass playing do you want me to do, you know? And I was like, yeah, somewhere between like McCartney and Jameson and, you know, I don't know, like Ron Blair from Tom Petty and the Heart. I mean, like, you know, there's parts where it has to be simple and there's parts where it's going to need to like move things, and there's parts where you get to do crazy shit for no reason, you know. And he's really good at doing all that. So it's been really fun to put this second set of recordings together. I think there's more of everybody in all of them.
How, what's that like songwriting genesis then though? Because you're talking about things very much in a modular sense, but still leaving it open for once you get there. Because obviously you have to prepare before you get to the studio because of some of the instruments that you're using, some of the stuff that you want to be doing, but you're still leaving like, what, like 10% open for that experimentation in the recording studio. So at what point do you start mapping that out? Is it when the demos are done or is it before?
Yes. You know, I don't know. I think like some songs will be a thing where I will at rehearsal be like, let me try this one thing before y'all go home, you know, let me keep you 10 minutes longer, you know. And it'll be like, I'll kind of be like, inherently this is how Kelly plays this when I'm doing this, inherently this is where Kelly wanted to go, and inherently this is where Jeremy wanted to go, and this is what Kanika wanted. So I just kind of get like the initial like knee jerk like, okay, cool. And I don't have the whole song yet, I just have like a thing, and I'll get like a, I'll just get a quick pulse of like, what are these brains? Where are these brains going?
God's Song. I remember the first time when you like had us play those chords or whatever, and just play that riff. You were just like, let's just play this for a second. You were just like, da 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 da, you know. And I was like, cool. And then like the next time we were together, you pretty much had.
Yeah,
that song.
I'll demo stuff because I can kind of sort of play drums and kind of sort of play bass, you know. So I'll demo a what I call like a very like a rough sketch, like, you know, this is, it's, you know, tempo's wonky, the fills don't work, my harmonies are off, everything's a one take.
But you get the idea.
Yeah, that's what the idea
but
is.
But also,
though,
you were doing this over the pandemic as well.
Yeah.
So you sent, he was sending us video and audio demos of like the majority of the songs on the new album. So these songs have been coming together for actually like three or four years, some of these.
Some of them, yeah. And then some of them are pretty new, you know. So it's been, yeah. There's your 10% that you leave room for. It's like, we're recording next week. I got one more song that we got to get done, you know. So
is it hard to kind of finally say you're done then? Like at what point, we talked about McCartney a lot. Obviously, McCartney was kind of a recording whiz by the time he left the Beatles. But then you also think of like Brian Wilson, that obsessiveness.
Yeah.
At what point do you like take your hands off it before becoming that way?
Yeah. So I think the first song that was written for this second album, most of the songs were written in India when I was there on my last most recent trip. Most of them were written in India, and the Hanji songs were already being recorded and in production and everything. That was like the train that had left the tracks, you know? So I think the first tune that I kind of walked out of that experience with was this one song called the Sabarmati River, which is kind of like a long rock and roll groovy praise song about bodies of water, you know? That have been in my life, focuses on the Sabarmati and the James. So those are the two rivers of my life. That song was the first one, and then it has, like, structurally it has all the things that it has, which sounds ridiculous to say or hear, but hear me out. So it structurally does this one thing, and then there are all these other songs that still structurally do this thing, and they kind of work together. And then the last song, I Will Be There, was written in January of 23, and it start, like, if you look at all the songs and then you look at I Will Be There, you're kind of like, that one doesn't feel completely like the rest of them. It still does, but it has a little something different to it, and that's my point to take my foot off the accelerator for the album, where I'm like, cool, evolution started. These are done, and now it's time to go in, like,
Is that like a Radiohead sense where like every last track on their records for a while was like the preview of what's coming next?
No, you know, I don't even know if it'll end up as the last track. I just know it's the last song where I was like, this will work with these other songs, but if I did another one of these, I'm going to need to start thinking about an EP,
gotcha.
You know? So I was like, this is where for me as the songwriter, for me, I was like, this song works with all the other songs. But if I did a few more that went in this direction, we might need to start thinking about a new basket to put them in.
The road would split.
Yeah, exactly.
Kelly, so, you mentioned. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's. I was just gonna say that's where I stop. the album for me.
Kelly mentioned God's Song.
Yeah.
And you decided to approach a record label to release it.
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind that? What are you hoping to get from that collaboration? Because you hadn't done anything with a label before, had you?
Not with the trio, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. Other bands, but with the trio, we just had, I mean, really, we'd put out this one Small Town Blues EP, which was a couple of tunes that we recorded at Moonwalker when we were at the very beginning of bandhood. Mm-hmm. And I think like one or two of them we don't really even play, or maybe four of them, or three of them we don't play anymore, you know, whatever. But that was a good, like, you know, that was the one thing. And then Hanji, you know, was released during the pandemic, and it, to me, was just more like, cool, we have this done. I think it sounds great. I think it's like a good, you know, hey, this is the trio, and this is where we're starting this thing, you know. And then for God's Song, I'd been talking to Craig, you know, for, like, I think even in 23 and yeah, definitely in 23.
And the record label in question is Shaco Records.
Yes, correct. Well, you know, because I'd mentioned to him, like, it'd be cool to do something. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And I thought, you know, well, if and when something makes sense, that's a cool road to journey down. And we recorded God's Song at Mountainside, right? Yeah, at Mountainside in Charlottesville. Yeah, that's right, with James. And it was part of the reason for recording God's Song. Is because I wanted to check out Mountainside Studios. Are we going to record any more there? And it turns out we are recording half an album there. But it was a good way for us to get one song out. It was like kind of the newest song that at the time we hadn't had recorded. I thought everybody sounded great. It didn't feel like it needed a lot of tweaking. Some songs need tweaking. Mm-hmm. This one I was like, this is a live song. We play this a million times. Just go fucking knock it out. Get in the studio a day. Order some greasy food, knock it out, you know.
Yes.
Dr. Hose.
But also, I think that it was the Hanji record got like such a, on our own, I mean, this was like just, you know, just us completely 100% independent. The Hanji record got such a good look, you know, that it seemed it would make sense for us to try out a different way that could also get a few more eyes on the record. And, you know, we would, this kind of brings it back home, so to speak, because we recorded everything outside of Richmond, and then to have it come, to have it be released through Shaco Records, I feel like it just, I think it just expands the Prabir world, if you will. Cause like the Hanji record to me is the introduction to really to Prabir's life to a deeper look towards not just it being like a trio, because you know all those things, you know, people will just make assumptions about what it is that we're doing, you know. It's like, oh, it's a trio, it's Prabir trio, sounds cool, you know, cute, whatever, you know. It's like, but no, it's like he's actually telling some real stories and about his life in the songs and about his experiences. And I think that really hit a different chord, if you will. You know, so I think having it come out through Shaco, also, I think is just gives it an extra added, you know, punch, you know, to everyone, you know, to let everyone know it's like, this is like some serious shit, y'all. You know
well, I mean? And the subject matter is, so what's, what is the elevator pitch on the message? You know, when I introduced the podcast, I used blessings.
And oh, yeah, totally.
We've been, you know, blessed. Let's hear your elevator pitch on
God's
core
Song?
Of it. Mm-hmm.
My elevator pitch would be God's Song is a musical way to put a mirror up to all of us and examine the word that has kind of made the world what it is today, you know, the written word of God, you know. So much of human history has been shaped by theological thinking, And it is only in recent times, all things considered, you know, I'm not talking about a year or two, but I mean for humans, it's pretty recent that we are thinking of things like, you know, different nebula far away that it would take light millions of years to get. I mean, there's things much greater than us, and knowledge has become a god, you know, or the quest for it is similar to how we once had a quest for getting closer to God. And I don't know if they're inherently separate from one another. But I do think that a lot of the world is set up in a way where we will excuse certain atrocities in the name of God, or we will herald certain victories in the name of God when they can be the same thing. It just depends on what side you're on. So I think Godsong is more just like a comical way to look at like how humans have been pretty hypocritical in their own doctrine and belief and stuff, you know? And it's not pinpointing a specific God. It's, again, it's the royal God. It's like, you know, all of, you know, I think we've, if such a being exists, you know, or has ever existed or will exist or whatever, if such a entity exists and we're able to come, we're able to create something, presumably they got other things to do, right? So they go away for a while, do other things. Maybe they're creating other universes, who knows? But then they come back and they're kind of like, oh, let me see how the humans are doing, you know? And then to be like, wow, we really have, you know, because there's no religion on earth that will say that you should knowingly decimate your surroundings. If anything, every religion on earth is saying, like, be a steward to the trees, to the animals, da 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 da. And then you look at, like, how we are, you know, literally creating this patch of plastic in the Pacific Ocean, you know. So I think God would come down and say, I don't remember making that, you know. Like, I don't remember that as a part of my creation, you know, that kind of
that's
thing.
That's new.
You know,
I think my instructions were misinterpreted.
Yeah, yeah,
right. That's
yeah.
Exactly what it
or
is.
You look at like, you know, so that's one of the things in the song is we talk about how there's like polyethylene everywhere, you know, and God would probably be like, wait, what now? You know, how did this, wait,
I gave missed you all, an entire yeah, portion I, of this evolution. Yeah.
And then there's, you know, you look at the different types of hierarchy that exist because according to religion, the hierarchy is a little tricky, you know, it should really be for everybody and all that. And perhaps in modern times, a corporate hierarchy is a good symbol of all hierarchy. And, you know, where the folks at the top may be able to afford the nicest clothing shipped in from different parts of the world. And the people at the bottom will struggle the entirety of their lives because they're locked into this hierarchical relationship, you know. And I can't imagine that God is going to look at that and be like, thumbs up, you know, that would be another, I don't remember making that situation. Or just, you know, you look at the thing of like, how preachers have acted, in ways that are nefarious, you know, I don't think that would be very pleasing to the big G.O. Dizzle. you know, and
well, let's listen to a little snippet so yeah. Everybody can picture what you're saying here.
We're walking down the street one day, and he said, I haven't been here in a minute. He looked at all the things that seemed familiar, then he looked at some things that didn't. He looked at the birds in the trees. He looked at the birds in the sky. He looked at the
Okay, I don't know.
Drum fill. That was a drum fill right there.
That was the best part of the song.
Doug, have you heard? Was that the first time you'd heard
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess. From what I'm taking from your elevator pitch, which that's a long elevator ride.
Yeah, but it's a tall building.
Yeah, but that's good though. But it seems like it's more like what I guess like a spiritual assessment of like late stage capitalism.
Yeah,
this is actually being taped at the C&G guys. Right up the street, 19 floors. Sorry, excuse me.
Yeah.
Hardware.
I guess is it hard to kind of funnel those ideas though when you're thinking about it? Because like you know you talk about the plastic patch in the Pacific, but we also have like a plastic ring around Earth now with all the space debris that's just growing and moving outward.
Yeah.
So is that just like I guess like
it's representative
human sprawl? Greed, I guess.
I think it's just mentioning a few dominoes that have fallen, and that I think it alludes to more dominoes to fall. Mm-hmm. You know. But yeah, it's you know, tried to keep it kind of Randy Newman-esque and kind of keep it on the lightheartedness because it is pretty heavy and serious in all reality. You know, it's not something that should be simply made a joke of, but, for this context and this delivery and everything, I was like, yeah, let's do it. And to be extra tongue in cheek about it, the physical product is going to match the, delivery of the song, you know, so the song is kind of a silly approach to it, you know, so the physical product is a prayer candle designed by Richmond's own Brett McCormick Designs, and it's a prayer candle that will lead you to this song for you to download, both spiritually and with a QR code.
Before we dive into the prayer candle, because I definitely want to ask questions about that, I do want to ask, so like you had that song on the last record, America.
Yeah.
It's the way you're explaining it, exactly the same. I guess the reaction to that song gave you confidence to do this one, because you know, calling out America, one side is always going to agree with you, but going after like a bigger theological essence is a lot more.
I actually, this is going to sound ridiculous, but there was a day where a musician and a rabbi and a priest walked into a bar together. I actually did take some theological minds with me to Bamboo to discuss the song and to kind of be like, is this stupid of me? Like, I think this is a good song. I think it works well with my range and my vibe, and you know, we nitpicked over some lyrics, just you know, they were like, what do you think, you know, and there were a couple of changes that were made here and there, but I did want to talk to people that are in that industry, because it is an industry, you know, to make sure that I wasn't going to be doing something that is unfair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm all about fairly criticizing. And so I didn't want to do something that would maybe be an unfair assessment, because the song is about unfairness, ultimately, you know.
Well, you want it to be provocative, but you don't want it to be disrespectful.
Yeah. I think sincerity, again, I wanted it to be sincere, you know. And so we had a great chat about it and met with a, you know, a preacher and a rabbi at Bamboo.
Doug, your question about the prayer candle?
Yeah, I guess so many questions about the prayer candle. I guess, like, what sparked that idea? Did it come out of that Bamboo Cafe meeting?
No, I was in D.C. Awaiting Kelly, actually. Kanika and I were in D.C. at the studio, at Ivacoda Studio, and in the bathroom, he has a bunch of these prayer candles, and they have like Mark Twain and Albert Einstein and Willie Nelson. And, you know, they had like all these non-deities, so to speak. And I just remember thinking like, oh, that's a funny, like, no, I wasn't even thinking about God's song or anything. I was just like making a correlation to like how that candle represents so much of, or those candles represent so much of like this wonderful comedic aspect that I wish more people could embrace. And oh, it'd be so, if the world, you know, if these candles weren't a problem with somebody, we might be living in a lighter, more chill world, you know. Then we continued recording the album, blah, 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 nothing, you know, yeah, we continued, and all life happened. And then when I was talking with Craig about the release of this thing, you know, and he was like, is this going to be a CD, you know, and I thought like, no, fuck CDs, man. I'm like so not into plastic, extra plastic. The whole song is about like how we're making trash. I don't want to make more trash, you know? Even Hanji, we didn't shrink wrap, like, because it's like, why do we need to shrink wrap things that aren't, like, you know, going to expire or be poisonous or venomous or, you know, what are we protecting, you know? So I was, number one, there was that thought. Vinyl, we're not going to get done for a single song. It would, you know, both Prebir Trio and Shaco Records would go broke on that venture, you know? So I was like, we need a new product. And I just kind of sat down, thought long and hard about it, and just thought about, like, what are religious things, you know? And
did you light up in the name of love?
Of course. Yes, of course. Yeah. Cool. I love a good shtick. I love a good package, you know? And I was just like, well, maybe, you know, maybe this, like, I was going through Jalen's packaging, you know? And I was like, this is great, because it's not an actual, like, product. It's a QR code, but it comes with things. You get artifacts, you know? And then I think just somewhere in that mesh of everything and having a deadline, I put prayer candle down on my list of, like, I don't know what this means, but, like, here it is, you know? Along with, like, you know, the other thing I wanted was to, like, one of the potential ones would have been a, you know, those pamphlets you get for, like, the... Where's your soul going to spend eternity?
Tracks. Oh, yeah.
Tracks,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like, maybe we make a custom one of those and there's a QR at the end.
You just pat some out and carry
it. Yeah, down. Yeah, and that's the release of God song, you know, something. But ultimately, the candles won out because I love working with Brent. He's wonderful and he makes really cool art.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the idea of having a four-headed God.
How many proofs of that did you guys go through?
Not that many, you know. He specifically asked for, like, he's like, send me the pictures of your faces that you want me to, like, do something with, you know, make sure they're all copyright free. And they were, so it was like, all right, you know. And then I kind of sent him some links of traditional Hindu gods and how they are represented and the colors. And, you know, he sent me a couple of links and we kind of, like, narrowed it down to a few. And then I told him to, you know, just let it happen, you know? And he did. And it looks great. And it's going to be a prayer candle.
It's, like, right on brand, to be honest. I mean, we've the other things that we've done, the bundle stuff, we've had, you know, was incense.
Incense from Rishikesh, yeah.
You know, and all that stuff did pretty well. Like, you know, people, you know, bought into it, if you will, so right away. So it's kind of like a prayer candle is just the next step, you know?
It's also a one-time limited piece of art by a great local artist. You know, Brent's phenomenal. Oh, yeah. And to have
shout out Brent.
And to have
the Wimps.
And the Wimps. And George, you know. Like, yeah, they're all too, you know, Brent, anything Brent touches, I think, turns to gold.
I feel the same,
you know?
Yeah. And
so I think it's also a cool, like, one-off product, you know, to have at your house, you know, or whatever. To
not go throw your prayer candle away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a multi-use thing, so it's not like you don't, like, just... Yeah, it's not like one piece of plastic that you get rid of at some point. It's like, this will serve a purpose for as many, you know, like, it'll last this many hours of light and heat or whatever you want to, you know.
I'm going to put mine right next to my Stevie Nicks prayer candle.
Yeah, there you go.
So the single drops on the 29th. The single release is March 2nd at Bandidos, and then Prebir Trio is playing Shaco Sessions live on April 2nd at Reveille.
That's right.
We're going to create a nice little atmosphere there. Where can people go for more information?
On social media, you can find all that information at Prebir RVA, or go to the website, which is hiprebir.com, like you're saying hi to me. Hi, Prebir.
So many different meanings to hi.
.com.
Doug, thank you for co-hosting.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I absolutely love having someone else to shoulder the responsibility with. Well, I just love how other people... I love your music mind so much,
thank
Doug.
You.
Like, I love the questions you ask. It just... It creates a fullness to a conversation, so I appreciate it.
You should watch out for this guy, though. He's ready to start fights.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man.
He's got some strong Beatles opinions.
I've gone through opinions. I've got more, too. We'll go off air.
Okay.
That was just one album, Kel.
That was just one album.
He's in prayer candles here right now.
Yeah.
You wait till I drop what I'm going to drop on Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
Then the candles will be used for a vigil. Woo! Well, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
Jeremy and Kanika, we missed you, but we will see you very soon. And we will listen to you guys real soon as well. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to This Room sounds great. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Visit ShacoSessionsLive.com to get tickets to our live shows and to watch online. And visit ShacoRecords.com and sign up for the newsletter so you're always in the know of all the groovy things we've got going on. And that's a wrap.